sure hope you're hungry. Ooh, I'm starving. Wash those hands, pull up a chair, and secure that feed bag. Because it's time to listen to Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss attempt to use human language to converse with and pick the brains of other developers. I thought there was going to be food. So buckle up and grab that O-shit handle, because this ride is going to get wild. This is the Syntax Supper Club.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. This is a live stream. We haven't done a live stream in quite a while. And I'm pretty excited about it because we haven't done a live stream since we've done the Supper Club. And we've had this idea of doing what we call the shameless plug-isode for a long time, which is basically like, tell us what you're working on. What do you want to plug? What kind of cool stuff do you have? So if you have a question for the podcast, if you want to plug something, you just want to tell us kind of what you're working on and chit-chat, you have a sick pick, you name it, come on down. Join in on the Riverside. There's supposedly a button that says ask a question. So feel free to hit that button and we'll bring you on, or you can just ask a text question as well. How are you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing great. Yeah, doing really good. Just trying to get through it, you know. It's that fall time of the year where everything's getting really cold, but we're so like knee deep in this redesign that I'm so like, you know, final last 10% of the way, push through it, find all the bugs, do all the stuff. Get going that way. I solved one of the major bugs that we were having in Safari yesterday. And this might be a little interesting. But if you have an aspect ratio defined inside of another thing that has an aspect ratio, Safari apparently doesn't like that very much. And what happened was, even with JavaScript completely disabled, it was like almost an infinite loop of repainting where it was just trying to get the aspect ratios correct. And it just kept growing, crashed the browser. Chrome, for some reason, is just like, fine, whatever. It's the outermost parent. That's the source of truth. Safari didn't like it. So it was a hard bug to solve. But, you know, one of those ones where it's like, oh, Safari's crashing for literally no reason, only on iOS. And I have no idea why.
like it actually was like the whole app was actually crashing.
Yeah, it was crashing. It would do like a refresh. So it would like grow until that like repaint cycle like exceeded whatever limit, and then it would refresh the site. So it was almost like continuously refreshing. But again, like, I mean, you turn off JavaScript and it's still happening without JavaScript. You're like, all right, now this is an interesting one. This is a fun bug.
Oh, I do not envy the folks that have to deal with those. Like, aspect ratio is not based on like anything else. So like that's a bug in itself. But you think about some of these bugs, like Flexbox bugs, that something is like, I had it with my nav, where if the nav was like a certain width, then it would wrap onto it the own line. And then, thank you. Oh, my wife is bringing me a coffee and a cookie. Nice. Thank you. Love
coffee
you.
Coffee and cookie. Look, I got a coffee and a tea.
Double.
And a lovely...
double fist
who's
in
this
it, yeah.
Dear? Yeah, I don't... Is this Bambi? This might be Bambi.
All right. So, lovely guests in the audience. Let's see. Not sure how many people want to ask a question or jump on, but this show is yours. So, folks, do you see a ask a question button in the bottom? Just throw it in the chat. Oh, we got one right here. Hey, Wes and Scott, what are your thoughts on the Vercel announcements yesterday? Pretty excited about TurboPack. Thoughts on Vercel? Okay, so that is a great question. So yesterday, Vercel had a big, huge Apple event where they like props to Vercel. So Vercel has major, major marketing behind it. I got, not lying, probably 10 emails from a PR company. They asked me to sign an embargo to get the inside scoop of what they're announcing earlier. I didn't do that because like, I'm a web developer, you know, like, I'm not a journalist. So they have the major stuff behind it, and they announced a lot of really exciting things in Next.js. One of them, kind of related, is like Vercel hired the guy who made Webpack, and they are building this new thing called TurboPack, which is another bundler built in Rust, 20,000 times faster, apparently. So that's pretty exciting because now I think we're in like the post Webpack era. We have Vite, we have Parcel, we have SWC and ES Build, which power a lot of those things. We have
TurboPack,
a lot of these new environments. Yeah, TurboPack now. So it's pretty exciting for that. I think that's really cool. I think it's got a bit of a ways to go. There's no plugin support. I know a lot of people rely pretty heavily on like plugins and whatnot. When you sort of like move to Vite in Parcel land, you don't use as many plugins because a lot of that stuff is built in. You might not even know that you're using a specific plugin for that. So I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's kind of early days to see exactly what it is, but I think it's great for the ecosystem.
Totally. Yeah, it's funny that, you know, it's listed as so much faster than Vite, and Vite is already really quick. So it'll be interesting to see if it is, you know, actually that fast. At the end of the day, you know, what's cool about it is that it does push the tooling forward. And if there's one thing that we learned, especially with like the Vite folks in general, is that they're pretty good. They're pretty good at really stepping up to the plate here. So there could be something coming up.
Somebody said that it's ES Build, right?
Correct, yeah.
Vite uses ES Build. So there is a possibility that Vite could just switch out like the engine of, like, I don't think like Vite and TurboPack are the same thing. Maybe they are.
The big like, difference here is that TurboPack is not targeting specifically ESM output, where Vite is shipping ESM. Where TurboPack is supposed to be just like a straight up replacement for Webpack. So it's like get rid of Webpack and use something that can compile. But like Vite is very specifically targeted strictly at ESM, which you think would be a open path to be even faster. So who knows specifically? Because that's a lot of where Vite speed comes from besides ES Build. But the fact that it is targeting ESM builds and it's able to cache those individually and chunk them and stuff, it's a little bit different. But yeah, I'll be excited to see what all shakes out about this. I think the plugin support is a big deal. I saw some conversation on Twitter earlier today about like you have to write plugins in, what's it called, in Rust, which isn't like a problem, but it greatly decreases the amount of developers who are able to write plugins for the system, and it does increase the kind of barrier to entry there. So
yeah, there's someone just posted a tweet thread from Evan Yu that says,
I was just had that open, which is why I stuttered when I was talking. I was like, oh yeah.
Anytime I see one of these like 20,000 times faster graphs, I kind of go like,
yeah,
like the poor people that work on these things.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
really you spend your entire life working on this type of thing. But like for an end user, I think it's good. Also, like, let's talk about what else Next.js layouts they announced. Nested routing, very exciting. That's Scott has been talking about this on the podcast for years.
Since
that's really
literally
exciting.
I think React Router like 4 or 5. I've been talking about nested layouts, and that's a reason why I cannot go from vanilla React to Next.js. And like everyone was like, I don't know why that's a big deal. I don't know why you're talking about that. Flash forward 2022 and everyone's like, nested layouts. Oh, and it's like, come on. I've been saying that for so long.
Yeah. So exciting stuff. And the React server components, I think like it's inevitable that you're going to have to use some sort of framework if you want React server components, just to make it easy on yourself. So I'm pretty excited about that as well. By the way, I forgot to hit the go live button on YouTube. So welcome to all of the YouTube folks who are tuning in. You can join on the Riverside link if you want to ask a specific question and we'll answer, or if you want to come on and plug your own thing.
Sorry, YouTube people. We are just now coming live. We've been talking for a little bit over here on Riverside.
What other questions? Oh, I forgot to mention, we got two sponsors today. Our sponsors are Auth0. They are the easiest ways for developers to build and add authentication to their applications, and AppRite, self-hosted backend as a service that provides developers with the core API required to build any application. We'll talk about both of them partway through the episode. Oh, we got a call. Hold on. CTO of Riverside.
Oh, wow.
Should we bring him on?
Let's bring him on.
What's up?
Get in. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
So cool to meet you all.
Yeah. Yeah, this is cool.
Actually, Wes, we had a Twitter interaction like a few months ago where I said that I built Riverside after taking your course, Learn Node course. That was like meta.
I remember that. That's awesome. I thought we should probably have you on the podcast for a full blown episode because, like, Riverside is awesome. I can't believe all the different features in like the real time. I would love to dig into the tech behind it.
Yeah. Also, sorry for the pixelation. We're working on getting that quality higher, but there's a bunch of optimizations we can do. I will send you after the call. I'll send you some stuff how to get the quality higher.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I've got some people in YouTube right now complaining. They say I'm 240.
Very fast. Very fast. Next one will be perfect. 4K.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, tell us about Riverside. What's your stack there?
Also, for everyone to know, the recording will be like really high quality. That's the whole point of Riverside. Maybe like the whole live call might be a bit less, but the recording, that's what's really all about. So you all have like great quality for listening and viewing. The tech stack, basically we use on the backend, the Node server that's still full of that's delicious examples.
From my course, that's awesome. Man, I'll take responsibility for the pixelation
and and bug file and our front end. We still have parts of our front end rendered with bug. So all the current developers really are big fans of you at Riverside.
Oh,
yeah,
wicked.
We actually are also looking for people who like both of your content are very welcome to join us. On our journey.
Oh, so you're hiring right now?
Yeah, hiring full stack developers, AI people, people with WebRTC experience, also very, very wanted.
Wow, listen to that.
That's a question I have. So the WebRTC, obviously we're talking right now. And we've had a couple of people in the past talk about WebRTC, and sometimes you can go directly to the person. And sometimes they need like a server to sort of proxy it in the middle. Do you have to do that?
Yeah, we have to do that because if you want to have like proper latency, you have big distances. I don't know where you are located. I'm in Israel, so being like completely peer to peer is very cool in theory, but in practice it will become pretty slow. So we have a media server in the middle.
Makes sense. That is awesome. Where can people go to find your jobs that you've got posted?
Riverside.fm/careers.
Nice.
Video people who love creating video, want to think about new ways to create video, are very, very welcome to join us with code.
Awesome. That's cool. Cool. Well, anything else to plug?
Your podcast. I'm a big fan. And it's so cool to be live here with you all, like speaking.
Yeah, this is great. We were going to do this as a Twitter live stream, as a Twitter space, but like we could not get me and Scott both like overnighted gear to get our microphones into our phones and they both didn't show up. So we thought, and then our editor, Chris, shout out Chris, is like, hey, you could just use Riverside for this. And like you can push to
everywhere,
to all the everywhere, you know? So yeah.
Except for Twitter spaces.
You can push to Twitter live stream, but I don't have access to that yet. Hopefully one day.
Their developers should take your course as well, so they'll be able
cool.
to.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Gideon.
Peace. Well, that's cool. I like the whole call-in thing. I think that's really cool. And it just pops up and you can answer it. So if anybody else wants to jump on, please do.
I think it opens us up to being able to do this more frequently where we can just take calls from the audience rather than always reading out calls from our, like maybe we can even move some potluck sort of stuff to this format where people can pop in and ask the questions here. It makes it a little bit more interactive. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what other questions do we have here? Someone says you could... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Before Gideon hopped on, I was going to say that in relation to the Next.js stuff, where yes. they have TurboPack written in Rust, the big question Chris had was, with tooling moving to Rust and Go, do JS devs need to branch out, or should we focus on the end user solution? And this is a great question, which I saw another tweet yesterday from, I forget who, so I apologize for not shouting you out. But the tweet was essentially just like, hey, if everything that, you know, everybody's doing in JS tooling is so much faster than these other languages, why are we using JS at all? This is like, and then like the immediate response to that was just like sweating. Just like someone. I would say it's probably worth your time to at least take some of these like languages a little bit more seriously in terms of getting your feet wet with them. What's like, there's a really good Rust kind of interactive, if somebody knows exactly what I'm talking about, you can shout it out in the chat, but there's an interactive Rust course where it's all being done through the command line, and you're typing out, you know, Rust, you solve a bug, you run the command, it takes you to the next one. It's like a code-based tutorial. And I'll find it. I'll post it in the show notes like that. And that kind of thing is really good for getting your feet wet, to just get a little bit around the languages. Because if you're primarily a JavaScript developer, let's say if you're a JavaScript developer, moving to Rust is going to suck for you. If you're a TypeScript developer, it's going to suck a little bit less. The type system in Rust is very similar to TypeScript's in many ways, with the use of generics and stuff like that. However, have you ever wanted like 15 different types of individual things? Like, oh, you want a string that's short, long, whatever? You have to be really, really in depth with your types in Rust.
Lots of strings, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing about, sort of related, is WASM. Somebody just mentioned that. So Rick Schenink, I think it's a WordPress plugin that, or no, no, sorry, no, not, it's not a WordPress plugin, but it is a, like a JavaScript image editing plugin. I think you can use that inside of WordPress and whatnot. And it's awesome. And now he's working on a video editing plugin in the browser. And I thought, like, that's kind of natural progression. People are going to want to be able to upload clips and edit them. And he's using both the Media Recorder API, but then also, if you want to export it, he says he's got it working with using FFmpeg in the browser
using
with
WASM. Yep.
That's wild.
Dude, I've seen some really cool examples of WASM-based FFmpeg stuff.
He said it's 25 megs to download the WASM FFmpeg binary, which that's big, but also, like, if you were downloading a desktop app for 25 megs, you wouldn't bat an eye about them including FFmpeg. But that's wild, because like it makes me want to get into it even more, because I did like a hello world in Rust, where I was like, all right, I want to build something in WASM. And I did. I think I like said hello world in Rust and it logged into the console in JavaScript land, which is next level for me. But it's just so cool that you can do that all in the browser.
It's one of those things where I sit and look at that stuff and I say, if I just had a couple days to dive into this stuff, I would go nuts, because it's really what I want to do. I want to be diving further into that, because there's so much untapped potential there. And I know there's companies that are doing some really neat stuff in that space. And, you know, honestly, I don't know like what Mux's WASM story is, but Mux is doing some really wild stuff with video on the web right now, and stuff that's not released yet. So, you know, I think the world that we know with web apps and desktop apps is going to continue to get more blurred. And if you're wanting to future proof your career, you know, I don't know if learning Rust would be a bad idea. I think that's probably a good idea. But again, it's hard. It's going to take an investment from you. I posted the Rustlings example, Wes. If you haven't done Rustlings, this is a really neat tutorial, because it's not a tutorial necessarily. Like I mentioned, basically you clone this repo, you hit go on this thing, and it says, all right, there's a bug in this file, and you go to that file and you try to solve it, and then it tells you, all right, you've completed this lesson. Let's go to the next one. And it's all within your command line and editor. So it feels like you're working in real code while learning some syntax stuff about Rust as you go. This episode is sponsored by Auth0. Auth0 is the easiest way for developers to add authentication and secure their applications. They provide features like user management, multi-factor authentication, and even enable users to log in with biometrics. Let me tell you, if you want to implement your own biometrics code, it's not going to be a ton of fun for you. So if you want the type of experiences that people are having in native applications on the web, Auth0 is really the way to go. Besides, who likes to deal with roles and permissions and all that stuff as well? You get all of the tools that you would need to be able to manage users with Auth0 in an easy way that allows you to authenticate and authorize users to do various tasks. And it works with all of the SDKs, that frameworks that you're using already anyways. There's really nothing this won't work with. Not to mention, Auth0 also has SDKs for your favorite frameworks like React and Next and who knows what, just about anything you could possibly imagine. You can go ahead and quickly and easily get it going with your website. So give Auth0 a try today. Use the link in the show notes or head to a0.to/syntax, or just send them a tweet and let them know that you heard about Auth0 from Syntax. So thank you so much to Auth0 for sponsoring.
Let's see what other questions we got in here.
Which company will Vercel acquire next? That's a great question. It's so funny. I saw another tweet. This is all I do, is I look at tweets. I think it was a tweet from Swix, and it was just like, it'd be really great if Vercel could just acquire React from Facebook or from Meta. I was thinking, yeah, they probably are the ones pushing React forward more than anyone else at this point.
Well, they have, people were a little salty on Twitter yesterday as well.
Yeah.
Vercel.
Salty on Twitter?
Is that a thing? One of the Vercel employees is a core team.
Oh yeah, totally.
Core React dev, which, like, that's great. They're literally paying for somebody's time other than Facebook. But then they released a beta of React so it would work with Next.js. And people are salty about that because, like, what about Gatsby? What about Remix? What about all the other React frameworks? Like, would they be able to cut a release of that? But, like, honestly, I just think all the awesome that comes out of Next.js is probably worth it. I don't know. That's
it's an interesting conversation, at least, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, You say, oh, well, Vercel, this big corporation, now owns such a big chunk of what is React and their own platform. And yes, they're the anointed platform, but it's not like a large corporation doesn't own the rest of React. It's like one of the largest corporations. So would I rather Vercel own React? Yes, I would rather Vercel own React, because
and probably half the tech that you're using right now has the Guillermo had a hand in it in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
like, I don't think people, maybe if you're new to this, but you might not know that, like, Guillermo was behind Mongoose and Socket.io and I think a lot of the Express stuff. And, like, the guy knows the web, right? Like, it's not like he's some faceless, like, Oracle or something like that.
You know? Yeah, right. Totally.
I can't believe Meta hasn't tried to acquire Vercel. No, it's not Meta is not going to buy it. You know who's going to buy Vercel is, like, a hosting giant. Like,
you say that, though, but, like, think about it. Like, you know, Amazon is, like, the Amazon's huge, huge, like, income from AWS, and their play into hosting so much of the web. We're like, doesn't Meta want to have a larger play in dev?
That's true.
Hosting stuff. I mean, so many.
They need the source code. They spy on everything else.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to Clarkio. He's the same.
Oh, hey, gents. Digital. It's Brad saying DigitalOcean could buy them. Yeah.
How much is DigitalOcean worth?
Oh, probably quite a bit there.
I was going to say,
they're publicly traded.
Can they afford Vercel?
So Akamai just bought Linode, right? Like, that is a big company like that is going to come along and be like, you know what? So Akamai bought Linode because they saw Edge, like the whole edge computing thing sort of coming. And they said, we need to be in, I guess they're already in that, but that's kind of why they said it, at least in the thing. So there's big players out there. I bet for sure. Microsoft, could be a big Azure thing, right? Microsoft's no stranger to buying cool companies and then being the cool dad.
It is actually funny because it does seem like one of those things, like the Figma announcement, that'll just kind of show up one day out of nowhere. It'll just be like, so-and-so has agreed to buy herself for $1 billion, you know, $10 billion or whatever.
Could be Adobe, you know, like Adobe's kind of dropped off. You laugh, but that's the whole reason is like what stance does Adobe have in web development right now?
I hear you, but the Dev Horror Stories episode already came out, Wes.
GoDaddy. Yeah, apparently GoDaddy. So somebody... A couple of people listen to podcasts work at GoDaddy, and they said, someone sent me a DM. I get all kinds of interesting DMs on Instagram, but somebody said that like GoDaddy has turned into an e-commerce company internally. Like they're all in on, like they probably have gravy on people who are buying shared hosting. Like I still pay for a Bluehost box every year. And I was like, how many of those gravy trains do they have? But I think they're trying to look at Shopify and be like, you know what? We want that. We're going to be that.
Yeah.
Cloudflare could acquire Vercel. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that as well. I think Cloudflare would just build it themselves, but
I don't know. It's when you have the plan of hosting for the framework that all of these people are using, you know?
Yeah. That's the other thing, man, is that it's amazing that like Vercel can put so many resources into an open source framework, right? Like they didn't have a conference yesterday to talk about their hosting.
Yeah.
They had a conference to talk about their, and then it's obviously intertwined and there's only certain things that work. Exactly. Exactly. That's a funnel. That's how those things work.
Yeah. We put out a free this or that to funnel people into your paid courses. They put out a web framework to funnel people into their hosting. Hosting probably being way more profitable venture. Yeah.
How about a supper club with Guillermo? Yes. I would love that. You know what? It's Guillermo. Funny because we've had PR companies try to get him on.
Yeah.
And I was like, the dude literally DMs me. I should just DM him. Like, we don't need a PR company to do this. But like, I'm sure that at some point you have enough stuff. You have to hire somebody to do that sort of outreach, right? I'm sure he's a busy guy.
Yeah. What's interesting though about the whole Vercel stuff is I do wonder how this all works with SvelteKit in general. So you can't help but look at the announcements from the NextConf and be like, I wonder how tightly now that those teams are working together, because I know that SvelteKit's routing setup both inspired and was inspired by, in many ways, the work on the Next team, as well as work on the React Router team, obviously. But I know that there is at least some, you know, intercompany learnings going on there. And like, do those frameworks end up looking very similar at the end of the day, except for one's using Svelte and one's using React or whatever? I mean, SvelteKit right now feels a lot like Remix in many sort of ways. So I do wonder if Next.js will even get further in that direction as well.
That's just what I was going to say, is that like you look at someone like Remix and it's not out of the realm of possibility that you'll be able to use other language, other frameworks inside of it, right?
Yeah.
Will Next eventually be like a Rails framework where you pick your templating language?
Yeah. You know, I talked to, a good friend of mine who works at a large company that employs many developers, and he's a manager of, I don't know, you want to say like 50 people or so. And he was talking about how one of their biggest challenges in onboarding, like they have so many React components that, you know, they have so much code that managing between React versions is really one of the hardest things. A new developer comes on, they look for a pattern, they find a pattern in an older version of class-based components, they use that pattern and like perpetuate this thing. And like when we talk about, oftentimes we talk about like micro front ends and being able to use different versions of the same framework in one code base or using even different frameworks, he's a very practical guy. And he was saying like, that's one of the biggest issues for us is how, like, it's not practical for us to update every single component, but we have new patterns, but the new patterns occasionally get ignored, or they just get pushed along. So like, how can we ship and how can certain teams work in whatever they're fast in, rather than having to rely on some of this old tech or whatever?
Yeah.
But I think a lot about that when I think about these systems where, you know, to me, small teams and small people don't necessarily need the requirement for these micro front ends, but it's a real concern for real teams, and it'd be interesting to see how that influences a lot of these changes going forward in many of these platforms.
I'm excited to see what the upgrade path looks like. It doesn't look like a super smooth.
Oh yeah,
it seems like there's a handful of breaking changes, and so the Syntax website needs to be updated at some point. It looks like they have a couple code mods as well, like to update to next image and next link. So that's good.
Yeah.
Somebody asked, why don't you terminate your own Ethernet cables? I've been just making dozens of them because I have like a switch that I'm doing in my house, and I ran Ethernet all through this new office, and I am so sick of it because it's the tiny little wires. I keep putting them backwards. It is so frustrating. Putting them through I have it right here, like these little RJ45 ends.
People can't see that, Wes. It is so blurry.
Oh, shit. Well, you can imagine.
You can imagine it. It's an Ethernet cable. Beer Dedge says, I wonder how Fly.io compares to Vercel in terms of size. I don't know. I don't know what they have like a seemingly interesting user base, Fly.io, but I personally don't hear too much about them, and it's probably just my bubble that I'm in. But Fly.io, deploy your app servers close to your user. So it's one of these edge hosts where it's, you know, deploying your applications as CDN. It's, let's see, Postgres SQL clusters. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know too much about the service, to be honest.
Somebody asked, did I miss the episode where Wes tried out Vue? We actually never had that.
Well, we did when I taught you Vue.
Yes. Yeah. But like
you're right. You didn't try it out.
If I'm using something other than React, I'm on Svelte train right now. So it's probably not going to be a Vue guy.
It's where I ended up because Vue is too much like React for it to be like that different of a thing. If I'm going to use one, I'm going to use React. If I'm going to go in the other direction, I'm going to use Svelte. What's up, Brad?
What's up, guys?
Hey.
Wes, you're saying you're on the Svelte train. I'm jumping on the Remix train. The next announcement wasn't enough to make me sick.
Interesting. So why is that?
There's something about it that feels so tightly coupled to React, and it's like such a weird implementation of like doing things on the server first. That's going to take like a whole nother mindset to understand, whereas Remix is like, dude, we're just like, write a little mini serverless function that gives data, and we'll just revalidate it for you. Like it seems so like straightforward in my head,
right? Like that's what when we first looked at it, we're like, man, this doesn't seem like a React framework at all. This seems like a website framework, you know? This seems like a Node, and I'm coming from Expressland and all that. I'm like, yeah, this feels comfortable to me. So it's interesting to hear someone else say that as well.
Hey, Brett, have you seen any of the newer stuff in SvelteKit? I don't know if you're on that train at all, but
I wrote a Svelte app like 2 years ago without SvelteKit, and it was a good time, but I haven't revisited Svelte since then. Okay. So I have zero SvelteKit experience.
The only reason I say that is because you know, one of the things that they took, I don't know if took from Remix is the right way to say that, but very Remix like, is that it's the same where you have your server side function just exists as a function next to your route file, right? Instead of inside of the component file, but it uses same web standards like Remix. So you just use a normal form element, you hit that thing, and it handles and validating and getting your data. And then if you want to progressively enhance it, so by default, it just works like a normal form. You want to progressively enhance it, you just drop a use enhance onto that form, and then it does it all without a page refresh or anything like that, and handles all your data. So I found it, if you liked Remix's approach there and you were going to dive into this Svelte land, just know that the SvelteKit does it more similar to Remix, I think, than to Next.js. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's dope. Well, I came on here wanting to talk about cumulative layout shift caused by images embedded in Markdown.
Ooh,
you guys
can yeah. yeah let's
tell
do
us
it.
About it.
Okay, it always kicks my butt, right? You're writing content for your website, a blog, whatever, and you've got images in Markdown, and let's say you're not using something like the Next Image component and all this stuff. How are you embedding, right, the width and height into those image elements in Markdown so that it gets sent over the wire with the right attributes on it to prevent layout shift? I have my own ideas and my own approach, but I'd love to hear what you guys would do.
I'll tell you what I would do. I don't typically do very much of this, but what I would do is a most likely my own custom renderer for Markdown, which is, I don't know if it's like an underused feature of Marked, which is like the one everybody uses, but you could do a custom renderer, and in React or Svelte or whatever, you can define a token for this custom renderer, and then that will pass all of the string information to a component or whatever, and then you can use that to maybe add in some of your own spice. Like, I have a custom renderer for like a CSS, interactive CSS picker. But if you had your own renderer for an image where you'd be able to define dimensions or hard aspect ratio on that thing or something, then you could do that directly in the Markdown. But yeah.
Yeah, I do it all in my remark parser. That's what Nathan in the chat said. It seems like a remark thing, but like you said, what if you're not using that? So tell us.
Oh no, that's what I wound up having to do. I moved all my images out to Cloudinary, and I was like, well, dang it, now I can't just query the file system for like how big they are and stuff. So I had to write my own Rehype plugin that actually hits a Cloudinary URL that gives metadata back about the images, like their width and their height. And then it embeds that or adds those attributes on during the build process.
Oh, that's like a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah. And that has to be, that's like on a build time thing, right? Like, you couldn't really do that on demand, or you could do like a stale while revalidate kind of thing.
You could. Yeah. Like you would just, I mean, I'm sure Cloudinary probably caches those headers quite a bit, or caches those images and responses quite a bit. So, I haven't seen any like big performance issues with it. But yeah, that's how I'm getting the data. Because yeah, you can't just set a fixed aspect ratio because those images could be anything. You know?
I would probably cache the SHIT out of it and deal with the layout shift on the first request.
That's one of those things that is too hard to do yourself, and you need something in your framework to do it for you, just because of how it's tricky. It's really tricky. That's why I loved when I built my site in Gatsby. I was like, all right, this just does it for me. I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. I don't do too much of that style of image adding. So I guess that's hard for me to give any good advice on. But I think image stuff will get... The Gatsby image tools were so nice that I would love to have just that everywhere, no matter what.
They're way nicer than the Next ones. And every time Next says they come out with some improvements to the image component, I'm like, it's still not good enough. And so now I'm like fully going down the rabbit hole of doing my own. The last thing I need to do is figure out, you know, like sizing, so I'm not pulling in an image that's too big for what's actually there. And I'm like, gonna write that whole stack.
The layout shift, somebody said, Anthony says, layout shift is definitely one of the most painful parts of building modern CSS. It's so true. They said, remember when like Hawaii had the like accidental
earthquake thing?
Like nuke attack or something
was it a
like
nuke
that?
Thing? I thought it was an earthquake. I could be totally wrong.
No, it was like, it was something flying to, or like a missile or something. Anyways, there was a joke going around that, like, not that you should joke about this stuff, but there was like a button that's like send alert to everybody, yes or no.
And there's a layout shift.
Click no, and then there's layout shift, they click yes.
Oh, yeah.
It drives you crazy. Oh, Brian, what's up?
Not much. I don't have anything to really add to the conversation, to be honest with you. But I'm geeking out over the tech that you're using for all this. It's kind of cool to have people call in so easily.
Yeah.
And,
this is our first time doing it, so we're still figuring it out. But I think it's pretty neat.
Nice. Yeah, it is very neat. And then also, I was the one, Wes, that brought up the terminating Ethernet cables, because I saw your story. But I love seeing all that stuff, man, because I like geeking out over the tech of building out networking equipment. I'm a fan of Ubiquiti as well. Although, I'm kind of kicking myself, because while it's great to have that level of control, there's also the ownership of the maintenance of it and updating it. And if anytime I've let it do auto updates on its own, something gets messed up and I got to go and like restart everything. And what's been your experience with that?
Oh, shoot. Yeah, it's been solid until the last major update. I've got a hard drive in my router. Yeah, the router has a hard drive in it that records locally video cameras, which is awesome. Mm. It's awesome because the playback is butter when it's local video, and you have like a dedicated CPU to parse that. But something happened where it said, "Hey, yeah, like something's wrong with your hard drive." And then I went on the Reddit for Ubiquiti, and everyone was saying, "Ah, it's happening to me as well." So I haven't dug into why that's happening just yet. It just rebooted it, and I think it went away. But just little stuff like that. But other than that, it's just like pretending to be a network engineer, just plugging stuff in. It just works, you know. Like I never have to configure anything. Like I forwarded some ports and put a static IP on one box, but that was about it.
I have the Alien, the Amplify Alien from Ubiquiti, and like I think that's a good. Like sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I had more control over this network with this thing. And then other times to hear this conversation, I'm like, actually, I'm good with the plug and play. Just plug this thing in and it just works.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I jumped in. I went from like a standard all-in-one type of thing. And then I was like, no, I want this control. I want to be able to see what's happening on my network. And then I'm kind of kicking myself because like, I don't really look at it that often, to be honest, with myself and you all. And then, like I was saying, the maintenance of it sometimes. But I'm curious, Wes, with the cameras. So I originally, before even jumping into the Ubiquiti tech, have been using like Nest cameras, and they've been great, but there's times where like somebody will ring the doorbell and it takes like a good minute for it to load up and stuff like that.
What's up
with your Ubiquiti ones? Are you seeing that it's like more snappy? Like you can get like quicker viewer?
Yeah. It's cause it's all on the, like if you're on the local network, it's just so nice and fast. And I'm hoping to get the doorbell at some point. But I don't have that just yet, but I like that kind of stuff is really, really great. So like the speed is a one. And then there's also like the privacy thing. Like I have tons of Wyze cams as well, but it's kind of nice to have control over all your cameras.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do the Nest cam thing too. I've got Nest cams all over the house. I use them for like, you know, baby monitors almost.
Oh yeah. We use our Wyze cams for that, but it's whenever you really want them, it takes forever to load.
Exactly.
And like Google can't figure out if they're like ditching the Nest name or moving forward with their own app.
Oh,
like classic Google. So it's like, you know, a split thing.
Is there anybody more confused with branding overall than Google? It's like, no, it's the Google Home. Now it's the Nest Home. Oh, wait, it's Google Hangouts. Now it's Google Chat. Now
like,
it's,
what is their like, email called? Every time I want to get my email, I'm like, what is it? Google Workspaces now, and like which one am I in? It drives you crazy.
Figure your branding out.
Yeah. Anyways, talk about the Wyze cams. I got one of the Wyze cam V3s.
Yeah, I have a few of those.
And we put it in our basement because we have a new basement now, and we only be able to see the kids when we're in the kitchen. So we just stream the camera onto a Google Home, and like in the past, that has not worked well. But they moved over to WebRTC, and it is like, I think also it's local as well. I'm not 100% on that, but it's very fast.
How'd you get that working?
You add the camera to your Google Home and you just say, Google Play, listen, text podcast. No, you say,
what do you add the Wyze cam to your Google Home? I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. You connect your Wyze cam to Google Home. You tell the Gurgle to view the camera, and like we'll have that on for 12 hours a day, just streaming the camera from the basement, so that when we hear like a scream, we can like look and like, oh, they're fine.
I like those little Google Homes. We have one with the screen, and we use it all the time. And my kids have figured out how to use it to okay, Gurgle, like show me, videos of Apache Cephalosaurus, and my son like loves Apache Cephalosaurus or Pachycephalosaurus, and he'll get to watch YouTube videos on it without it being like, let me click through everything that exists on YouTube. He can get educational stuff or whatever. But
yeah,
those little things are nice.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Love that kind of stuff. We have four of them now around the house, and it's just the photos alone, just being able to see your photos from a year ago. Oh, that was fun. That's worth it. But
totally.
The home automation stuff is good as well.
Brad, your camera looks great, by the way. I just wanted to, yeah.
Sony A6000 with a Sigma.
Yeah, Sony mirrorless. Yeah.
I got the A6500 here. I haven't got the battery kit for it yet. So.
I have to say bye because my computer's about to restart from this last update.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, we got another guest on here. Let's bring him in.
Go as well.
Thanks, Brian, as well.
Thanks for having me.
Later, Brian. We had a double B gang there, Brad and Brian.
Yeah. Hi there. How do you say your name?
My name is Soumya.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Scott and Wes. The podcast is really great. Like, it was one of my first podcasts, tech otherwise, which I used to listen. So I'm a software engineer from India. And, I took Wes's JavaScript course, beginner JavaScript course. Like, I know React, right? But, lot of things... which are very fundamental, right? I did not know those earlier, right? Like, a lot of things got clear. And, I also made some notes, which Wes was nice enough to put in his readme. So many people came and, viewed my notes. And, one of the main reasons why I'm calling is to thank you for the course, because, that course actually helped me land a job. I got a job.
Nice.
Where are you working?
Yeah, currently I'm working at Microsoft as a React engineer in Microsoft
Teams. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Microsoft Teams. Oh, that's awesome. Holy smokes.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I didn't realize that Microsoft used
React.
Yeah,
isn't the online versions of Word are built in React?
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
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 Wow. Well, that's cool. What's building React at Microsoft like? Do you have to... go through lots of meetings and teams and whatnot, or can you just build your own product and you get to choose the tech?
No. Like, it was already, so I am working on the search results page, like the SERP page, right? Like, when you search for something, and you press enter, the results come up, right? So I work on that page, and the architecture and everything was already, built up. So I just joined, 2 or 3 months before only. So I'm a new joinee.
That's awesome. Cool. I love hearing that. What part of India are you in?
I'm from Bangalore. So it's called the Silicon Valley of India.
Right on. That's cool. It must be pretty late there right now, though.
Yeah, it is 10 p.m. basically. Yeah.
You got to get to bed, buddy.
I'll go to bed. But after having dinner. But I also have a small YouTube channel. Just wanted to plug that.
Cool. Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
What is it?
My YouTube channel's name is Geeky SRM. So I just shared the link. It's GEEKYSRM. So I just have 2K subs. Just starting to post videos, tech videos.
Awesome. I'll put the link in the show notes. Everybody, let's get him that 100,000 plaque.
I'm subscribing.
Thank you so much, man. Scott and Wes, thank you so much for bringing this awesome tech podcast. Like it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good
day. You're welcome. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Peace. Let's talk about our other sponsor, AppRite. AppRite is a self-hosted backend as a service platform. What do you mean by that? Well, you can self-host it. They also have something called cloud coming out pretty soon, which is you can just sign up and start using it. They have database, auth, storage, functions, and real-time. Pretty much all the parts that you need to build an application. They are big in the web. They're big in Flutter. They're big on iOS apps, big on Android apps. The real-time stuff looks really, really cool. If you want to build an app that has real-time WebSocket stuff built right into it, they have, basically, you just import client from AppRite. You can hook up to your endpoint, and then you basically subscribe to the different channels that are available. And you say, all right, well, when a file changes or when a message comes in, I want to know about it. And you can go ahead and immediately get that in instead of having to pull or hit multiple HTTP requests. So check it on out at AppRite.io. You can also go to AppRite.io/cloud and you can sign up for early access to their cloud. That's going to be really, really key, especially for full-blown apps. But if you just want to build something really quickly, this seems like it's going to be really good for that. Thank you, AppRite, for sponsoring.
Okay, Anthony Rivas says, on the topic of networking, are you still using your Synology NAS? Are you happy with it? Do you wish you had gone in a different direction? As far as I'm concerned, I think Synology is like the way to go. I haven't used too many other systems, but I did have prior to Synology. I had a like Western Digital Business one, which was still a NAS in the same sense, but it stunk compared to the Synology. So I cheaped out when I could have gotten a Synology at first and have regretted it. So Synology to me is really good. You know, one thing I really like is in general, their software, you know, just updates automatically for me. And every time it updates, it works. It looks good. The user interface is always improving. The tools are always improving. And once you get your handle on it, maybe you spend some time on Synology YouTube for a little bit. It's really pretty easy to manage. Yeah.
I love Synology as well. It's like a couple times I have been like looking on like refurb servers on eBay.
Yeah.
Just for like, cause I'm starting to run like a lot of like Docker and web servers on my Synology as well. And then I just go like, you know, like I don't want to have to babysit this thing.
You don't want to.
I don't
want to
have to upgrade it and sysadmin and patch it and everything. I just want to hit the update button. Sometimes stuff just stops working. You got to figure that out. But it's not anything compared to running your own show. Because like literally, if I want to have a Docker image, I just like click the button.
Yeah,
right. Docker image. You fill out the like environmental variables in like the little text file right from the browser. And you fire it up, you're like, oh, I'm a Docker expert now. When in reality, I just clicked a bunch of links in the thing. So I love it. I'm running, people always ask me, what are you running? Home Assistant on it to do the house automations, just getting really going with that. I run like a Backblaze backup. So I throw all my course videos on there and then it will like dupe it over to Backblaze. So you have a local and an offsite version. I'm running, I'm running Wyze RTSP stream, which is not the custom Wyze firmware, but what it does is it connects to all your Wyze cameras, parses the feeds, and then gives you an RTS feed out the other end, which you can then pipe that into literally anything, including what's the Apple one? HomeKit.
Or
yeah, you can pipe
home
it
assistant.
Right into HomeKit.
But have you had a good experience with that? Because I found it to be particularly not fun. I guess to say that, like, I found it to be almost unusable in terms of performance.
So
Docker Wyze Bridge,
It's called Docker Wyze Bridge. For me, it has been working great. I don't use it for the real timeness, because that can like it is. There's a delay in between all of that, and that's not usable. But like, what I am using it for is, I put them all on Home Assistant, and then I have a dashboard of all my cams right inside of Home Assistant, which I pay for Wyze Pro or whatever it is. So I could just use the Wyze has a web interface for that as well.
Sure. Yeah.
But I like it, and it's nice to be able to pipe stuff in here and there.
So you just grab the stream, the RTMP stream from the bridge, and then use that as a media thing inside of Home Assistant. That's what you do?
In Home Assistant, you add like a generic camera.
Generic camera.
Everyone always says, do you need to update the cameras or do you know that? I think Wyze is getting out of the custom firmware. This happens with every company. They start,
let's do it all
love
ourselves.
It. They go crazy. People love it. And then as they get bigger and bigger, they start to distance themselves from their like power users and go towards just like a regular folks. So I think Wyze will probably stop the RTSP firmware. They've stopped updating it with all the new features and everything like that. So it's just, I'm not interested in running custom firmwares. I don't know what the server bill at Wyze looks like for me streaming all my cameras all the time, but it's working. Oh, my wife just brought me some water. I've got the like post-COVID hack and I'm just trying to kick it.
Yes, you can. You can kick it. You know that song?
Who is that? Beastie Boys?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, it's Tribe. Yeah. A Tribe Called Quest. Can I kick it?
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Can I kick it?
I don't know why I thought that was Beastie Boys.
I can't imagine I'm sure the Beastie Boys have said, can I kick it at some point? Somebody had a question about Svelte earlier, so I can speak on that. Okay. At what point do we consider Svelte ready for smaller team needing to build mature products and be able to hire people capable of high-level Svelte writing? Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting world. You know, the Svelte kit breaking changes, there's going to be no more breaking changes in Svelte kit. So you don't have to worry about like shifting sand there anymore like we would have before. So, you know, whether or not you'll be able to find a lot of people who are writing high level Svelte code, it may be different. You know, I'm doing my part. I'm doing a lot of like training and workshops and who knows what to just try to get people working in Svelte because I love it a lot, you know. But also, you know, we have a very large project, Level Up Tutorials on SvelteKit, and we're going all in with the SvelteKit APIs, and it feels nice. It feels nice to use in production. It feels nice to use as a developer. And I think if you can get people on board with it, then, you know, you're not going to have a hard time teaching React people how to write in Svelte because you say, hey, it's just like React. All of the kind of extra stuff you have to write to do a thing, you know, the set state, now you can just state is equal to thing and it updates, right? So it's like React if you strip away a bunch of the stuff you have to do. So
yeah,
you shouldn't have trouble training and teaching people Svelte if that's the direction you want to go. Because again, there's so many, you know, the biggest lessons in any of these frameworks, whether it is Svelte, React, Vue, Quick, or literally any of these things, is how to work in the componentized world, how to work in the world where, you know, you have state, you have application state. How do you work in this world? And once you get those kind of general concepts down, you can bounce between any of these frameworks, really.
Yeah. We just had a question. Somebody was trying to call in to talk about HTMX.
Oh, wow.
And then they, whoever that was, call in again, because that was...
Call in
there
again,
we
yeah.
Go.
Okay, Brian, so I ditched Mike. So Mike,
all right, hey.
It's going to be a little bit hollow, but yeah.
That's okay.
Okay, so my background, I'm self-taught, and I build internal tools for my team. I don't work in an engineering firm, I work in a school district. So we've built several tools to manage events and manage grade books and all kinds of stuff. Learned Svelte, and... worked with it for a while, but then I didn't like working with it. I just really did not like touching my front end at all. We've got Flask running as a back end. I didn't like touching the front end because there were just so many variables going on and I had a really hard time managing state. And it may just be because I'm self-taught or because I built it poorly, but came across HTMX. And what this allows you to do is it's super declarative, but I can also throw events on just about anything on my front end and I can return partials. So we've got a very SPA-like front end, but it's all server-side rendered using the templating engine built into Flask. So if you're using Django or you're using Laravel or whatever, I can make a request to my server, to my backend on any route, and it can return HTML partials, which are then updated dynamically on the page in real time. And so all the state's managed on the server. And so I was just curious if you've come across it. I don't remember hearing it on the show before, and that's why I threw it in there, because it does seem like something for people who are coming into front end with a more back end experience to kind of bridge that gap between the two.
Oh, no, I was going to say it's interesting that it works with the like Flask templating language. So then you're not like we literally just on Monday had a conversation, Wes and I did, about like backend folks using template, you know, whether it's Rails or whatever, they have their own templating languages. And that's why those people aren't adopting React or Vue or Svelte or whatever, because it's too much of an effort. So the fact that it works with those types of things, it's a huge, I think, huge plus in its favor.
Yeah, mainly because all the variables happen on the server. So I'm declaring my templates with variable placeholders and I can run loops and conditionals and whatever I want in that template. Because then over the wire, it just comes back as hypermedia. It all is HTML at the end of the day. And so
that's great.
All of that dynamic stuff is happening before it's even sent. And the fact that there are libraries now that allow you to do partials for your templates. Michael Kennedy wrote one for Jinja, which is the Flask templating engine. So I've got very component-like structure in my projects where I can break it out into individual forms or individual dynamic, like, you know, select boxes even, that dynamically populate your choices. So it's very component focused in that sense. And knowing Svelte helped me make that transition. But now I've got a single repo and a single source of truth for all of those things. So Scott, for your Scott tries, I want to challenge you. I'm going to throw a gauntlet down.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a quick start on the HTMX page. They threw one up that gives you a quick start environment. You don't have to spin up a server or anything to get it all working. So
cool. Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to do this. And I, you know, to be honest, I did a bit of work with Django and Flask in the past. So like, I'm just like, even like wheels turning. I always liked the templating languages in both either Python framework, but man, that's it. It all sounds pretty great in terms of you know, the things that we sacrifice to work in all in one language. You miss out on some of the niceties of all of these other language and templating frameworks. I do love a good templating language myself.
Is this similar? It doesn't look exactly, but like, do you know if it's in the realm of Hotwire?
Yeah.
And what's the PHP one? LiveWire or something like that? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. But like on, you know, when we're talking, a lot of people are pairing it up with Alpine. So they're using this to handle the swapping on the page, but they're pairing it up with Alpine to handle some of that interactive piece or some of those AJAX requests.
But
you should check it out. Like, they've got a really active subreddit, and the lead author, Carson, he is really interesting. He's got some really good essays on the page, but he'd be a good guest for your supper club too.
Yeah, I'm into that.
So part of the response from the server would be HTML with Alpine markup in it?
Yeah, so your templates include your Alpine markup on it. And it gives you some custom headers that can dictate what happens on your front end as well. So for instance, I've got like a little toast element that just lives on my app's homepage. And if it comes back with a request header that can trigger that event to throw a toast up. So I can even handle all of that kind of notification stuff in my server events based on the action that's happening. So when we update a course or something like that, or when a user registers for a course, they get a little pop-up that says you've successfully registered, and it throws it into their calendar and they've got their schedule. We've got all of our documents handled that way as well. So the headers that it allows you to use as well just make it that much easier to control some of those front-side events, so you don't have to have all these JavaScript event listeners on the page.
Yeah.
Wow, this is really cool.
It's really cool. It's one of those things that I've seen, you know, pop up, but like, you just don't spend any time with it or don't get the full picture until you talk to somebody about it. So yeah, I'll spend some time with this. It's right up my
alley. I'd be curious to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, it's my vibe.
That's all. Just wanted to plug HTMX. I've been using it for about a year
really
and
cool.
a half now.
I appreciate it.
It's definitely worth checking out. So thanks.
I love hearing like what people are actually using, you know, and like, this is what I landed on to do internal tools.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing.
Cool. Thanks guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brian.
We just got a question. Any thoughts on the Docker WASM technical preview? What?
I don't know anything about that.
No, technical preview of Docker WASM is now available. WASM has been producing a lot of buzz recently, and this feature will make it easier for you to quickly build applications targeting WASM runtimes.
From the Bytecode Alliance. There was so much drama recently in that world. Do you know too much about that?
No. No.
There was like drama around the WASM, the Bytecode Alliance, and like people saying that around WASI, various infighting from various groups saying we don't recognize this, we don't recognize that as being have you heard the term WASI before?
No, what's this?
Basically, they were saying WASI is like not part of WebAssembly's goals. WASI is the WebAssembly System Interface. It's a modular system interface for WebAssembly. Basically, my understanding is that it allows you to use APIs that interface with WASM without having to write languages that are like outputting to WASM specifically. It's like allows you to interface with things that run in WASM without having to write Rust or C. That's my understanding of it. But
okay. I'm just trying to understand, what is the Docker part of this?
Oh, yeah. What is the Docker thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Is it that the Docker is running WASM stuff, or is Docker running in WASM? Could I run entire server in the browser? Can I run a Linux container in the browser? Is that what it is?
Well, you can run. Yeah, I mean, what containers are in the browser already?
Oh, someone says, sounds like you can run a super lightweight container. That's kind of cool. Also, maybe Code Sandbox, CodePen, one of these companies will want to say like, all right, well, you want to run a little Linux server a little PHP
are already
server?
Doing yeah.
Yeah, but it's going to make it easier to do that via Docker.
Yeah, for the normal people, because I know there is it Stack Blitz. Who's doing? Somebody did the interactive. There's a new interactive Svelte kit tutorial, and that does this exactly. It runs in a container on the web.
Oh yeah.
So that way you can have a node server for your Svelte kit app.
Yeah, I think that was Stack. We had them on. We had Stack Blitz on, right?
Yeah, we had Stack.
And we had Gitpod as well. I think Stack Blitz was the one doing it in WASM, or they're working on running Firefox in the browser, something like that.
Man, browser stuff about to blow
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
You know, pretty between
wild.
Between WASM and AI and machine learning and all this stuff, can't help but feel like things are getting a little crazy. We're not making awesome. Websites anymore. That's for sure.
Cool. All right. Well, that's an hour. Should we wrap it up here?
I think so. I think this was a lovely, lovely experiment, and I think we should do more of these.
Yeah. Let us know your feedback. Obviously, the quality streaming on YouTube. We'll talk to the Riverside folks.
We'll get it straight. Now.
See how we can, get that 4K piped in. Otherwise, we'll stop talking about it now. But yeah, we'll get the quality better. But let us know what you think about this format of people coming on. It's kind of fun to be able to do it and bring other people on and to plug their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, thank you all for joining us. This was a lot of fun, and we'll do it again sometime.
Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.